senior hockey writer, our NHL insider, is going to join us. Let's set it up in terms of the transactions from yesterday. Just the one trade that involved players, and that was Colorado acquiring both Brooks Orpik and Philip Grubauer from the Washington Capitals in exchange for the 47th overall pick that the Avs had. That's in the second round. Chris, let's maybe start with that. It turned out to be the only deal yesterday. Is that surprising?
Well, big time. I mean, look, we spend a lot of time Thursday talking about everything that's going to happen. Nothing happened in the end, I mean, on that front. And, you know, working the draft floor a bit here in the last 20 minutes, talked to a couple GMs. Like, there's some frustration out there because there are teams that really wanted to be active last night and couldn't make something happen. You know, I think that there's a couple like Calgary that didn't have a pick that wouldn't have minded moving up if they could. You know, Carolina really wanted a second first-round pick after drafting number two overall and have a lot of their players on the market, and they just couldn't get it done. And you know, I think that they're coming back this morning hoping to find something.
Let's deal with that one trade. What does that allow Colorado to do, and what does that allow Washington to do?
Well, I think it means John Carlson won't hit the free agent market. That's a significant development for the Washington Capitals, because they were one of the teams when the $79.5 million salary cap came out, they were disappointed. Because at one point, they were hoping it'd be 81, and it shows how fine the line is for what they're balancing this offseason, that potential million and a half dollar swing in the other direction impacted what they were going to do. And so they have John Carlson as a UFA, but they also have Michael Kempney, who became his defense partner by the end of the playoffs, as an RFA. And now they feel that there's going to be enough money there to get everything done. Well, we'll see if that happens. But I sense that that's going to happen now, and that's the reason Brooks Orpik's included. It's a pure salary dump. I mean, they love the player. They spent the whole playoffs praising him, talking about how he changed their culture. And, you know, the hard part of the business here is that they use the opportunity that Philip Grubauer had significant interest from other teams to move his salary and you know, hopefully keep their defense intact.
Brooks Orpik's time in Colorado won't be long by the sounds of it.
No, he shouldn't get a house. He shouldn't even get a flight there, because he's not going to play for the Avalanche. I mean, they've already told him that. And, you know, give Joe Sakic credit for being open with him. You know, I believe that he's a tradable asset still, because he's down to the last year of his deal. If Colorado retains half his salary, that's less than the buyout number for them. So it makes sense for them to retain the maximum amount. And so Brooks Orpik for 1 year at $2.75 million, whatever it would be, with half the salary retained, to me, that's a movable asset. Obviously, we know he's at the declining stage of his career in terms of performance, but, you know, I would think he'll be flipped, and in the odd chance he can't, they still have a few days here to use that buyout window and make him a free agent.
Sportsnet's Chris Johnston, our guest here in Dallas. Pat.
So did you get the sense that there was a ton of discussion on the floor yesterday, and that things were close, and maybe we start to see some of those things materialize in day two today?
Oddly enough, it doesn't seem like there was that much discussion. It's like everything went away when it got to the big moment. And you know, one of the things the one GM mentioned to me is that teams just are coveting their picks so much now that, you know, where he thought there might be a market for some of his players for a first rounder in last night's draft, it just turned out teams aren't willing to take that risk now. And I think, you know, maybe this is some of the evolution of understanding of how the cap works and the dynamic that you need players on their entry-level deals who can do something usually if you're going to have a good team, you know, to balance, you know, your high-paid players. And so, you know, I'm sure we're going to see something today. I mean, I remember the Travis Hamonic deal happened on the Saturday of last year's draft. We typically do see trades on this day. But I don't know that the seeds were planted too much last night. But all week these guys have been talking. And I think the reason we had so much hype coming into the first round was because there was so much discussion going on Wednesday and Thursday that, you know, I'm sure there's, you know, teams will circle back today, because, you know, for the GMs, this tends to be less of a stressful day. They basically turn it over to their scouts because, you know, they don't know in the fourth round. There's usually not a decision to be made from the GM of a team, and I think there's an opportunity for them to maybe talk and let their scouts run the drafting side of things.
How much do you get the sense that the pending decisions of John Tavares and Ilya Kovalchuk maybe backlogged things and clogged things up on the trade front?
Well, it's hurting the scoring market because, you know, we talk about guys like Max Pacioretty being available, Jeff Skinner, you know, players that if you're acquiring them, you're viewing them as top six players, guys who can score, and that's exactly what Ilya Kovalchuk is. And Ilya Kovalchuk is different than the other free agents in that he doesn't really have to wait till July 1st. He doesn't even have to wait till the interview period officially starts tomorrow night. So he can make a decision at any moment. And you know, he's down to Vegas, Boston, L.A., and there's a
San Jose
as his last four choices. And so three of those teams are not going to get him. And you know, I think if one of them was told this morning, for example, he'd made a decision, you know, you might see them, especially L.A. I think they're very motivated to make a trade if they don't get him. You know, Phil Kessel is a possibility for them. I think Jeff Skinner is someone they've gotten their target. And so, you know, if that decision comes, we might see a little bit of a trickle-down effect and get things going. I mean, the Tavares situation, I think, will probably dominate discussion today because as of last night, he hadn't decided 100% whether he's truly going to use his window Monday to meet those teams. I think that decision will come down today, and we'll get a sense, is he actually going to test free agency? There's still this skepticism, despite the fact we're days away and he's a star player, that he's actually going to go through with this and not sign with the Islanders.
When do you expect those? Are we expecting that this weekend, Tavares and Kovalchuk, that we get word, or do we wait a little? What is your expectation in that regard?
I think Kovalchuk will decide by the end of the weekend where he's signing. I think for him, he doesn't want any part of the actual July 1st. I think he just, you know, he's traveled around to a couple places. He's down to his four teams. His agent sat down with each of those GMs yesterday before the draft to see where the final offers are going to be. And you know, I think maybe today, but certainly by tomorrow, we'll know in principle where he's agreed to sign. Tavares, I think it's today. I mean, first of all, there's just logistics involved. We're standing in Dallas, and he's got time booked off in Monday in L.A. I mean, if GMs or contingents from teams are going to go, they have to know if there's an audience, if there's a chance to talk to him. And so, you know, I do think we'll know by today whether he intends to meet those teams. And I'm sure if he gives them word on Saturday that we're meeting Monday, he's not signing. He could still sign with the Islanders, but he's going to go through those meetings just because it's a courteous thing to do.
You mentioned Carolina. You mentioned Jeff Skinner's name a couple of times. There's word that Elias Lindholm is...
Justin Falk.
Yeah, there's a lot of... How come that team is so eager to reshape? How come that team is so eager to move out some of the big cornerstone pieces they have?
Well, it comes down to their new owner, I think, in a lot of ways. Tom Dundon has said, I mean, he was on the record when he fired Ron Francis. He basically said, Ron Francis didn't make any trades. Like, I want a deal maker. I want someone who can get things done. And so I think it's really coming from the top there. You know, I sensed they were the one team last night being on the floor near their table that there was anxiety at their table because, you know, I think that there's a pressure on Don Waddell and his assistants to find these deals. And you know, Jeff Skinner, there's a couple things. Elias Lindholm needs a contract, and they don't like where the demand's at from the agent, and I think that they'd rather have it be someone else's problem. You know, Jeff Skinner, they just feel he's been there too long. They need, you know, a change of pace. Plus, you know, I think he'll get a decent return. He's still at a young age. You know, he scored an average of 30 goals basically the last four seasons. You know, he's a valuable asset on the market. And so I think they feel they need to change what their culture has been, and you know, they're anxious to make moves happen for this owner, and we'll see if they can get it done today.
Chris Johnston from Sportsnet, our guest here at the draft in Dallas. Chris, what about Pierre Dorion and the Ottawa Senators, and I guess maybe the biggest fish out there in Erik Karlsson?
It doesn't sound like he's truly in play at this time. You know, it depends who you believe on this. We did see Pierre Dorion talking to George McPhee yesterday, and everyone's connecting the dots. We know they had a lot of their phones were connected to each other pretty good leading up to the trade deadline. And you know, Vegas was going to be the spot. Erik Karlsson was going to move if that happened back at that deadline. But, you know, the Sens, to me, really seem committed to testing whether he's willing to sign a deal. And we can all speculate and say it never happened, this or that. But, you know, if they come to him and offer 8 times 12 for an extension, just to throw a number out there, make him one of the highest-paid players in the league, by far the highest-paid defenseman in the league, there's still a decision for Erik to make. I mean, that's guaranteed money heading into this year. It's guaranteed money that he's not going to get from somewhere else. And so I think that they want him to say no and before they really proceed with trade conversation. So, you know, it's still my sense. I don't see him being a Sen at this time next year, but they are going to put the ball in his court. They're not going to be the ones, especially now that we're through the first round of last night, to push the envelope on that.
With Tavares possibly coming out of free agency, with Karlsson possibly coming out of free agency, does anybody's rights get moved for negotiation purposes? With the window coming up, it seems like that opportunity would be closing too.
I think so. And you know, maybe those are the kind of things, too, that are being held up by these decisions, because certainly some teams that need a center help, they're going to be interested in Paul Stastny if they don't get John Tavares. They're going to be interested in guys like Tyler Bozak. And that's, you know, really the problem is it's a pretty steep fall down with respect to those players from Tavares if he's not in play. So I could totally see fifth or sixth round picks in the future being moved for those guys for the opportunity to sign them early. And you know, what this, to me, oddly enough, I think this interview period has hurt the players because everything is way more orderly. Teams have time to regroup and they have a couple days to sort of see how things fall, whereas back in the old days when it was the Wild West, if you didn't get your guy at 12:01 on the day free agency open, by 12:10 you got to make a quick decision on someone else.
Here we are on day two. Who are the teams and who are the names that you're watching to see if they're busy or if they end up moving?
Well, I'm certainly watching the Hurricanes closely. I mean, I really think that they're under some serious heat over there. We can almost see the steam coming off their table from where we're sitting. And they just because they have so many different players in play, I mean, they're talking about moving 22-year-old players that they picked fifth overall like a couple years ago. I mean, that's an intriguing add if you're another team. So I'm looking at them. I'm looking at the Montreal Canadiens here as we go into the second round with their four picks. You know, I think that I just talked to some there. I think that they're going to pick them, but they got a few balls in the air to see if they can maybe make some moves. And, you know, I'm going to be looking at what Pat Brisson's doing up there because I do think John Tavares has the ability here to become the story on the second day in some ways, depending what sort of indications he makes about what he wants to do.
2 years ago, right after the draft, we saw Taylor Hall traded for Adam Larson, and we saw P.K. Subban traded for Shea Weber. How much could things trickle down from here, and this could start some things that we see after draft weekend is done?
I think it's more likely than not. I mean, we actually don't have that, other than the two references you make, it usually doesn't happen too much. But, you know, the Phil Kessel trade happened with Toronto and Pittsburgh, with basically it started here at the draft, and they didn't get it done until July 1st. I think that there will be some of that this year because it's a strange market, and that the free agent market doesn't bear much. And there's a lot of teams out there actively aggressively wanting to add, and so I think the conditions are there to have a little bit more of that as we leave here, as we find out what Kovalchuk's doing, as we find out if Tavares is going to be on the market, those types of things.
Chris Johnston, thank you so much. We'll let you get back. We've taken you away from your valuable roaming time, so we'll put you back out there on the floor.
I'm the king of small talk right now, so that's good.
Well, we may get you on a little later. Chris, as always, thank you.
Thanks, bud.